Beware of the Dog by Roald Dahl. Part 1. Down below, there was only a vast, white, undulating sea of cloud. Above, there was the sun, and the sun was white like the clouds, because it is never yellow when one looks at it from high in the air. He was still flying the Spitfire. His right hand was on the stick, and he was working the rudder bar with his left leg alone. It was quite easy. The machine was flying well, and he knew what he was doing. Everything is fine, he thought. I'm doing all right. I'm doing nicely. I know my way home. I'll be there in half an hour. When I land, I shall taxi in and switch off my engine, and I shall say, "Help me get out, will you?" I shall make my voice sound ordinary and natural, and none of them will take any notice. Then I shall say, "Someone help me get out. I can't do it alone, because I've lost one of my legs." They'll all laugh and think that I'm joking, and I shall say, "All right, come and have a look, you unbelieving bastards." Then Yorkie will climb up onto the wing and look inside. He'll probably be sick because of all the blood and the mess. I shall laugh and say, "For God's sake, help me out." He glanced down again at his right leg. There was not much of it left. The cannon shell had taken him on the thigh, just above the knee, and now there was nothing but a great mess and a lot of blood. But there was no pain. When he looked down, he felt as though he was seeing something that did not belong to him. It had nothing to do with him. It was just a mess which happened to be there in the cockpit. Something strange and unusual and rather interesting. It was like finding a dead cat on the sofa. He really felt fine. And because he still felt fine, he felt excited and unafraid. "I won't even bother to call up on the radio for the blood wagon," he thought. "It isn't necessary. And when I land, I'll sit there quite normally and say, 'Some of you fellows come and help me out, will you? Because I've lost one of my legs.' That will be funny. I'll laugh a little while I'm saying it. I'll say it calmly and slowly, and they'll think I'm joking. When Yorkie comes up onto the wing and gets sick, I'll say, 'Yorkie, you old son of a bitch, have you fixed my car yet?' Then when I get out, I'll make my report, and later I'll go up to London. I'll take that half bottle of whiskey with me, and I'll give it to Bluey. We'll sit in her room and drink it. I'll get the water out of the bathroom tap. I won't say much until it's time to go to bed. Then I'll say, 'Bluey, I've got a surprise for you. I lost a leg today. But I don't mind, so long as you don't. It doesn't even hurt. We'll go everywhere in cars. I always hated walking, except when I walked down the street of the coppersmiths in Baghdad. But I could go in a rickshaw. I could go home and chop wood. And the head always flies off the axe. Hot water, that's what it needs. Put it in the bath and make the handle swell. I chopped lots of wood last time. I went home, I put the axe in the bath.' Then he saw the sun shining on the engine cowling of his machine. He saw the rivets in the metal, and he remembered where he was. He realized that he was no longer feeling good, that he was sick and giddy. His head kept falling forward onto his chest because his neck seemed no longer to have any strength. but he knew that he was flying the Spitfire, and he could feel the handle of the stick between the fingers of his right hand. "I'm going to pass out," he thought. "Any moment now, I'm going to pass out." He looked at his altimeter. 21,000. To test himself, he tried to read the hundreds as well as the thousands. 21,000 and what? As he looked, the dial became blurred and he could not even see the needle. He knew then that he must bail out, that there was not a second to lose. Otherwise, he would become unconscious. Quickly, frantically, he tried to slide back the hood with his left hand, but he had not the strength. For a second, he took his right hand off the stick, and with both hands, he managed to push the hood back. The rush of cold air in his face seemed to help. He had a moment of great clearness, and his actions became orderly and precise. That is what happens with a good pilot. He took some quick, deep breaths from his oxygen mask, and as he did so, he looked out over the side of the cockpit. Down below, there was only a vast white sea of cloud, and he realized that he did not know where he was. "It'll be the channel," he thought. "I'm sure to fall in the drink." He throttled back, pulled off his helmet, undid his straps, and pushed the stick hard over to the left. The Spitfire dropped its port wing and turned smoothly over on its back. The pilot fell out. As he fell, he opened his eyes because he knew that he must not pass out before he had pulled the cord. On one side, he saw the sun. On the other, he saw the whiteness of the clouds. And as he fell, as he somersaulted in the air, the white clouds chased the sun, and the sun chased the clouds. They chased each other in a small circle. They ran faster and faster, and there was the sun and the clouds, and the clouds and the sun, and the clouds came nearer until suddenly there was no longer any sun, but only a great whiteness. The whole world was white, and there was nothing in it. It was so white that sometimes it looked black. And after a time, it was either white or black, but mostly it was white. He watched it as it turned from white to black and then back to white again. And the white stayed for a long time, but the black lasted only a few seconds. He got into the habit of going to sleep during the white periods and of waking up just in time to see the world when it was black. But the black was very quick. Sometimes it was only a flash, like someone switching off the light and switching it on again at once. And so whenever it was white, he dozed off. One day, when it was white, he put out a hand and he touched something. He took it between his fingers and crumpled it. For a time, he lay there, idly letting the tips of his fingers play with the thing which they had touched. Then slowly, he opened his eyes, looked down at his hand, and saw that he was holding something which was white. It was the edge of a sheet. He knew it was a sheet because he could see the texture of the material and the stitchings on the hem. He screwed up his eyes and opened them again quickly. This time he saw the room. He saw the bed in which he was lying. He saw the grey walls and the door and the green curtains over the window. There were some roses on the table by his bed. Then he saw the basin on the table near the roses. It was a white enamel basin, and beside it there was a small medicine glass. "This is hopeful," he thought. "I'm in hospital." But he could remember nothing. He lay back on his pillow, looking at the ceiling and wondering what had happened. He was gazing at the smooth greyness of the ceiling, which was so clean and grey. And then suddenly he saw a fly walking upon it. The sight of this fly, the suddenness of seeing this small black speck on the sea of grey, brushed the surface of his brain, and quickly, in that second, he remembered everything. He remembered the Spitfire, and he remembered the altimeter, showing 21,000 feet. He remembered the pushing back of the hood with both hands, and he remembered the bailing out. He remembered his leg. It seemed all right now. He looked down at the end of the bed, but he could not tell. He put one hand underneath the bedclothes and felt for his knees. He found one of them, but when he felt for the other, his hand touched something which was soft and covered in bandages. Just then the door opened, and a nurse came in. "Hello," she said. "So you've waked up at last." She was not good-looking, but she was large and clean. She was between 30 and 40, and she had fair hair. More than that, he did not notice. "Where am I?" "You're a lucky fellow. You landed in a wood near the beach. You're in Brighton. They brought you in 2 days ago, and now you're all fixed up. You look fine." "I've lost a leg," he said. "Oh, that's nothing. We'll get you another one. Now, you must go to sleep. The doctor will be coming to see you in about an hour." She picked up the basin and the medicine glass and went out.